listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
I feel good.
Dad, are you singing to your cereal?
Come on, Ava. Silk almond milk. Starts the morning on a high note.
Silk almond milk.
With calcium, vitamins A, D, and E.
Feel plenty good.
Welcome to OK Sis Podcast.
Hi, sisters. I'm Maddie.
And I'm Scout.
And we are sisters IRL.
I'm the older one.
Yes, Scout. We know.
We're cultural observers.
And of curious minds.
Get ready for sisterly banter while we chat about fixations, learnings, and personal growth.
We promise it'll be a good time.
As long as you don't get too loud, Mads.
Welcome to the sisterhood. Hello, my fellow bibliophiles. It is Mads, and here we are, month two of the OK Sis Book Club. Hopefully, if you're listening to this, you have read Second First Impressions by Sally Thorne, which was the May Book Club pick. But if you have not, do not worry, because I'm going to quickly summarize the book before getting into my conversation with the romance novel queen herself, Sally Thorne. If you haven't already, be sure to join our book club group chat on Bunches to discuss the book of the month along with other recommendations. There are so many awesome women in there, so we'd love to have you in the community as well. The link to join can be found in the show notes and on our Instagram link in bio. May's book club pick is Second First Impressions by Sally Thorne, which is a story about Ruthie, a 25-year-old that lives and works on site at a luxurious retirement community called Providence. With the combination of growing up in a religious household and being bullied at school, she tends to feel safer, more comfortable amongst the retirement community rather than people her own age. Enter Teddy Prescott, a tattoo artist that welcomes constant change in his life. It is a classic opposites attract. And his father happens to own Providence and pushes Teddy to work at the retirement home to learn some discipline. So through this time together, people warn Ruthie about falling for this bad boy, but a friendship grows between them. As Ruthie is looking to come out of her shell, Teddy continues to appreciate her for who she is. Tidy, selfless, and unique. And then, of course, a charming love blossoms between them. All right, without further ado, let's get into today's discussion on Second First Impressions with Sally Thorne.
How's it going?
Hello, Miss Sally Thorne. Okay, Miss Sally Thorne, this is a dream for me, just so you know. First off, I want to acknowledge that my whole romance novel journey actually started with you and The Hating Game. I read it during peak pandemic, and then naturally I went to TikTok to express my feelings about the book, and I said, if you're looking for an alternative to porn, I would highly recommend reading The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. And much to my surprise, the TikTok went completely viral, which, you know, and so I think if you saw like a peak in book sales that month, that probably was my doing. I like to think that. But I remember I DM'd you about the TikTok and you had said that your friend had shown it to you and you were like, yeah, but my books, like in terms of sexually, they're pretty tame compared to the others, which was, and now that I have been on this journey, can confirm.
Yeah. Look, yes. I mean, I think a lot of people probably would have been disappointed buying the book with that kind of amazing recommendation to then find that it has one sex scene in it. So I'm sure you have discovered by now that mine is probably a 1 out of 5.
Exactly. But I think you are so brilliant at the buildup, which I I think is even more compelling than the scene itself. There's this tension that arises in all your books, especially this one too, for second first impressions. But anyways, I just want to thank you first off the bat, because I have been now on this incredible journey of discovering romance novels and talented writers and storytellers like yourself. And now it's my brand, and I've completely leaned into it. I think it's just who I am now. And people really respond to it. So it's been great.
So you didn't even read romance like when you were a kid?
No, I was a fiction reader, but then after college, I got really into nonfiction. I was reading a lot of business books and I don't know, trying to find myself, I guess. And then I discovered your book from, I think it was Pop Culture Happy Hour. They recommended it on it. And I looked to them, read whatever they recommend. And so I started reading it and I was like, oh, wow, this is delightful. And actually, this is the first question I want to ask you about romance novel genre in general, right? Like, I think I had the misconception that romance novels are, you know, chick lit. They might feel like intellectually inferior in some way. And I think they have this bad rap of that, perception. But what I have been realizing through this journey is that they're amazing stories. They're so fulfilling. They're so fun. Just because they're more easier reads does not necessarily make them lesser than. So I would love to hear just your opinion on romance novels in general and the genre and how much it's kind of blown up recently.
Well, I think that there's so much internalized dislike or belittling of anything that women like. Mm-hmm. So that's why romance has that rap that it's, you know, trash, or it's, you know, not worthy literature, because women love it. And I don't think that's right. I'm guessing I'm a little bit older than you. So I've been reading romance I was reading romance when I was 10 years old. Okay. I've read every trope that there is. You guys in the States call them, what do you call them? Harlequin books? Like the really short, I think I have one here. So I guess this doesn't really aid us in a podcast format, but they're just like the really short, you know them. They're not really expensive. They're everywhere. You can get them. I was reading those. We call them Mills and Boons in Australia. And I was reading those from when I was really young, because my mom read them, my grandma read them, and they were always everywhere. And I just fell in love with romance because it's a guaranteed happy ending. Like, yeah. there's no other space where you get that, where you're buying in and you know that the writer is going to take you there all the way and get these two people together who are on paper, they're not right for each other. And you can see all of the reasons why they should never be together. But you get to take this journey and take this arc, and you get to see people confront their fear or their demon, and the other person doing the same, until gradually you're seeing how they're just these two perfect puzzle pieces that are going to lock in together. And you see people make a big sacrifice, which, you know, like in real life, you don't often get to see someone make a really big sacrifice to someone else, and then you get that happily ever after. And all of that can happen in any setting. It can happen on a pirate ship. It can happen in an office. It can happen now or 1,000 years ago. And I don't necessarily think that romance has just had a resurgence recently. Romance has always been there. Romance has always been the top, like a top-selling genre, you know. People my age, people my mom's age, my grandma's age, we've always, always been reading romance. So it's never gone anywhere. And I guess just as we gradually all become feminist and realize that what women are creating is completely valid, I guess you are seeing it embraced more in mainstream media. Things like, for example, a recent example, Bridgerton, my book The Hating Game being shot as a movie. These are all further steps showing that why isn't it everywhere, because this is the highest selling genre of books.
It is so true. I mean, there's a reason I'm very attracted to rom-coms and movies that have these, you know, tied up endings that feel like you're running off into the sunset, and you just feel good while watching these, while reading them. It's just a way to feel great and to have an escapist experience from your daily life. So I'm all for it. I agree with that. It's unfortunate that, you know, something that women enjoy a lot and probably spend a lot of money on was not deemed as worthy or legitimate. So I'm really happy that the tides are turning, and that, I mean, you just kind of casually mentioned that The Hating Game is becoming a movie. I mean, just like, you know, just a little casual flex there. Mazel tov.
I'm good at that. I'll wave it in.
I love it. So you mentioned, you know, tropes in romance novels, specifically in Second First Impressions. We have Ruthie, who is this, you know, people pleaser, goody two shoes, you know, and Teddy, who is the more bad boy. So it's a classic opposites attract setup. And, you know, when you're starting to develop these characters, do you tend to make their personalities have this inherent tension because you think that it will further the plot, or is there a strategy behind that?
Yeah, you just generally try to start off the book with two people that don't fit on the surface. And a lot of the book is really about that. The title is, you know, Second First Impressions, and the process of trying to give someone a second impression of yourself. You have to start off a book with some people that are in opposite sort of places or look different on the outside. You think to yourself, how could a little nerdy girl that works and lives at a retirement village, how could she end up this book on the back of a motorbike, you know? And that's what the reader's looking for when they look on the back of the book. They're looking for that. They are interested by that, and they think to themselves, I want, like, you know what the ending's going to be. Sometimes I'll see people who I suspect are non-romance readers. They'll put a review that I don't read my reviews, but if I somehow see one, I'll say it was a bit predictable. It's like, well, like I was saying earlier, that this is the pact that I'm making with you when you buy my book in this genre. You have to understand, but it's the journey. So of course it's all a strategy, but it takes time to build up characterization over a number of drafts. I would say it doesn't all come out perfect.
The other day, my cousin looked at me and asked if I got a treatment in my hair. I said no, but I am taking Nutrafol. You see, sisters, I had some shedding issues postpartum when it came to my hair, so I made it my mission to support my hair growth and strengthen my hair. I mean, Mads, you saw my hair last time I was up in LA, and you even complimented me. Which, sisters, you know that when Mads compliments me, it's a big deal.
I do have to give this one to you, Scout. Your hair is looking thick, strong, and beautiful. When it comes to hair thinning, it's complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker and stronger hair.
Every morning after I eat breakfast, I take 4 pills, and it becomes a seamless addition to my morning routine. But the reason I decided to go with Nutrafol when supporting my hair health is that Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. Oh, also, Nutrafol makes the best Mother's Day present, especially for new moms. The perfect way to show them that you care about their postpartum support.
Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OKSIS. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OKAYSIS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OKSIS.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I agree with you there of this safety and trust that you put in to the author when you're reading a romance novel. You know the arc. I mean, it is a very predictable format, if you will. There's, you know, this tension and then it builds, but then there's like a conflict and then they get, you know, they resolve it. But it is, I love that. It's the journey of how you got there and how the happy ending manifests in itself. So you mentioned the title of the book, Second First Impressions, like obviously about misconceptions that, you know, people when you first meet them, but then when you uncover who they truly are. Why was this something that was important for you to explore? Has this come up in your life, or is just, did it, or did you name the book after you wrote it and you're like, oh wow, this does make sense that they needed to have different impressions of each other moving forward?
Titling this book was really hard. So my first two books, I said, this is called The Hating Game. And they said, cool. And then I said, this is called 99% Mine. And they were like, sounds good. And then everything I offered for this third book, they said, no one will buy that. And I went through, I'm probably not even kidding, like maybe 30 or 40 different titles.
Oh my God.
They kept taking them into like marketing meetings. I mean, there's a moment where you think, hey, aren't I the author? Shouldn't I be telling you what this is called? But yeah. these are people that know what sells. They know what looks good on a shelf. Mm. And when we came across Second First Impressions, they liked that. They liked that the title kind of encapsulates like a first impression that needs to be redone. And why did I write this book about this? I don't really ever set out to like, you know, explore a theme or something like that. I'm just trying to tell a story. Mm. And this was a story that I used to have a little daydream when I worked in a really boring office. I had a friend in that office and we used to joke to each other on those like terrible work days that when we were very old and when we were very rich, we were going to retire together to a retirement village. We'd be roommates. And we would hire a young guy and he was going to be our assistant. And no matter what we told him to do, he would do it. So if we wanted him to go down to Chanel for us, he'd do it. If we wanted him to go and get us pizza, he'd do it. So we used to just like have this like little running daydream about the sort of things we'd get him to do. And so I've had this story in my head for 10 years.
So you wanted to be Renata, which is like, I resonate so much with that character. I need to be her when I'm older. Like there's no other
well,
person.
I'm actually an Aggie. I would be Aggie in this scenario.
Okay.
So when you have a book deal, sometimes it feels a lot like a blank check because they're just like, tell us a story. And this was a story that I've always wanted to write. But of course I needed a nice dry narrator who's going to be witnessing all of this absolute mayhem and silliness. So that's where Ruthie comes in, and she's I think she's every bit as funny as the rest of the characters in her observations and her sort of real dry wit. And she's just really like this, you know, like there's always a straight man and a funny man in like comedy situations, and she's just trying to like stay professional but at the same time you know, she's trying to act her age a little bit more because she's been feeling pretty old lately. That's really a lot of what the book's about. And you know, I sometimes feel like this book is kind of like my version of Mary Poppins, that the old ladies come down to the front office saying they need a new boy, they need a new assistant, and they've got their wish list of what he should be like, and Ruthie sort of tosses it into the fireplace, you know, like, I'll give you one last try, but you know, once, if you can't find him, you've got to get someone sensible. You've got to get a, you know, an aged care nurse that can can sort your life out for you. And then he floats in on the breeze like Mary Poppins. So,
I mean, something also I really appreciated about the story is it's really focused on Ruthie coming out of her shell, you know, going through this method by Melanie of, you know, finding a boyfriend, finding a partner and transforming a little bit. But I really appreciated that there wasn't this like moment where she kind of like, you know, takes off her glasses and like her hair is straight or whatever. And suddenly she's like this gorgeous person. Throughout the time, we see her still staying very true to herself. And also Teddy really emphasizing how much he wants her to stay true to herself and who she is and does not want her to change. Was that a conscious decision for you? Because I was worried at the end that it would come out to this like, oh no, she needs to change for a boy, but it really wasn't that at all.
No, I think current readers and modern readers don't tolerate things like people having to change significantly for their beloved. You know, the scene at the end of Grease where Sandy turns up in the new outfit, mm-hmm. and then Danny turns up in his Letterman jacket never really sat well with me, because as soon as the song starts, he throws off the jacket and he's back to being himself, whereas she's looks like a completely different person trying to work out how to stub out a cigarette. Like, that's not my jam. There was nothing wrong with Ruthie at all. She didn't even need to step foot off Providence where she lives. She just had to like open herself to a possibility. That's really what the book's about. And he liked her just how she was right from the beginning. And, you know, like, why would he? Well, why not? You know, just because he's all covered in tattoos and he's got that long, beautiful hair and has a motorbike, you know, like that's just his disguise that he's put on himself a little bit. Right.
Totally. And you mentioned, you know, her having this fear of stepping outside of the retirement community, and you know, there's themes of like isolation and comfort zone, and sounds a lot like what we've been going through the past year of all of us kind of staying put within our little comfort zone and circle. So when did you write this, and were you predicting the future is kind of what I want to know, because I felt like Ruthie. I was like, oh my God, I'm fearful of stepping out into the real world. But, you know, I love that you say that even she didn't need to step out to find herself there, but there is this constant pull between her and the outside world.
Yeah, well, the true instigator of everything is her temp assistant in the office, Melanie. Melanie's the instigator. And if Teddy hadn't turned up, things still would have happened and unfolded in a different way, because it was Melanie that first noticed that Ruthie just needed a little push. And Melanie was perfectly placed. She's had every job there ever was, and she's very well qualified in helping people find love. And so Melanie was the little spark that started it all off, and got Ruthie to think in the first place about breaking out of her shell. And when did I write this? This is not my pandemic book. My pandemic book is like 10 times weirder than this one. I'd finished this, and books, when they come out, they've usually been pretty much done for over a year or and you just have to go through like the editing and copy editing. So I was copy editing it during the start of the pandemic and thinking, oh yeah, I've sort of like, you know, like this sort of dovetails in nicely with this kind of current world. And, you know, I feel like Taylor Swift and I might have had a bit of a mind meld across the miles, because I was like, oh wow, like this does have some cozy cottage vibes. This is folklore-y. Yeah. This is like a misty hill with a crop of pine trees on it, you know, like, there's definite vibes. So I mean, I do live in the future technically, because I am Australian, obviously. So I am in the future. I am only like, for example, I am tomorrow. how does the planet work? Let's do a separate podcast on that. yes. So, yeah, it's all worked out well. Everything that you write ends up hitting at the right time for someone.
Absolutely. Okay, so we need to talk about the sex scenes. And I know that there's only one in this book, and there was only one in The Hating Game, but you write them very, very well. And something I'm just so intrigued by on this romance novel journey I'm going on is I find that it's so impressive for writers to create these scenes and not make them feel cringy or cheesy, because I think it could go that way. So what is your experience? How do you approach writing a scene like this? Do you have to be in like a certain mood? Do you have to be drunk? Do you have to be, I don't know. Like what kind of vibe do you get into to write these types of scenes?
Well, first of all, you have to forget that your relatives will read it.
yeah.
Because my mom reads me, my mother-in-law reads me, my father-in-law reads me, my aunt, basically everyone that I know will read it. So you have to take a sharp fruit knife, and you need to cut out that section of your brain that knows that and put it in Tupperware, set it aside. I mean, sex scenes are important, in my opinion, because especially in a book like Second First Impressions, where you're in Ruthie's head the whole time, it's done in first person, wouldn't make sense to skip over it, because it would be a monumental moment for her, and something that she's experiencing in real time. So I feel like you guys have had a build up. We're at that point now where emotion kind of overspills, and it's just another way of demonstrating love without words. Although I think what makes a good sex scene is very often the dialogue. You know, people will remember that long after the book has ended. Look, I don't find them particularly easy to write. It's hard to write a kiss in a way that you don't repeat the word lips like every single sentence. It's all just kind of technical writing, where you're trying to describe something in a creative way. It doesn't sound very romantic, doesn't it? I mean, if you guys are all imagining that I do this like while I'm in a bubble bath, like no. You just have to like build layer upon layer until you've gotten them there. And this is, I don't know, it's not necessarily a question that makes me uncomfortable, but it is a question that people are really interested in, including people, you know, that I've worked with in the past will ask me questions like this. And I'm like, I don't know. I just find it to be a natural part of the story. And as I already said, I've put part of my brain in a Tupperware box. So I think that's the best answer I can give here, guys.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Anytime Fitness is for real people with real fitness goals. I mean, let's be honest. Most of us aren't training for marathons or half marathons or even half marathons. Only time most of us are running at all is if we're trying to make a connecting flight. Wouldn't have been late if we didn't stop to buy a headphone dongle. Point is, you gotta be ready. You do not want to deal with rebooking. Anytime Fitness, where real people help you make real progress. Join today and get a plan for training, nutrition, and recovery.
That's great. It's a fabulous answer. Is there a reason you typically only write like one or two scenes? Or is that because of the tension build and you think it's more impactful if there's only one at the end? Or do you not think that way?
Is this your way of asking me to write more sex scenes in my books?
Yes. Yes. Okay, I thought Sally, so. Yes. This is my secretive way of asking you to write more sex scenes.
You were fairly transparent in your line of questioning. Have you ever thought of writing 10 in the book instead of 1? Is that something you've ever thought about? You're artful in your way of asking these questions. Yeah. another person who has written their version of The Hating Game, you know, like, I'm not the first person to have written a book set in an office. You know, for example, my friends Christina and Lauren, who write together as Christina Lauren, they wrote a book called Beautiful Bastard, which was set in an office with two characters who hated each other. And that book is teeming with sex. It's got a sex scene almost every chapter. And I mean, it's just whoever's writing the book, and it's what their taste level and their preference is. So I guess this is mine, that it's, if you want the scenes to be meaningful and emotional, you have to have a build up. And, you know, I'm not that skilled yet, or maybe this is just how I prefer to do things, but I will take your request under advisement. You have to understand as well too, that like, now that I've got 3 books, you know, there'll be people that will expect you'll pick up a book and you'll think, oh, Sally Thorne book, this is what I think it will be like.
Right.
And if it's too, if I just write one that's like wall to wall sex next, it will be a bit jarring. I mean, except for you, like you'll definitely buy it, but
yeah, I'll buy it and I'll write the good, but yeah, I'll write the reviews. Don't even worry about it.
Awesome. Okay. One sale.
I love it. Okay. So to wrap everything up, I have some rapid fire questions for you. They're not intimidating. Don't worry.
Okay.
Number one, what does literary success look like to you?
Just having someone send you an email saying that they loved your book and it got them through a hard time, and that it's their favorite book, and that when they're having a shit day, they'll just pick it up and read a few pages of it, and then they'll feel better, and then they can go back to their terrible day job and carry on.
It's a form of escapism, as I said before. And I think that's what a lot of people run to your books for. It's incredible for that. Okay, number 2. What is your favorite underappreciated novel?
I'm sitting here. My brain has completely blanked. I've forgotten every book that has ever been published in the history of mankind. I'm looking desperately at my bookshelves. I can't see anything.
Or just one that you've loved recently.
Well, if I say it's underrated and then people say, well, actually, no, that was incredibly popular and well-loved, then I'll look like a jerk, won't I? I'm going to be boring and say that I think a lot of classics are like, people maybe don't appreciate them for what they are anymore. Like really old books like Little Women or totally blanking. You know what I'm saying? Like old, like I'll often read like children's books like Heidi or The Little White Horse or Alice Through the Looking Glass. Like, I love old classics like that, and like National Velvet, like really, we're talking really old books here. I think that they're as funny and fresh as the day they were written.
I love that. That's amazing. Okay, how do you select the names of your characters? Do you have just like a running Google Doc where you just have like cool names you like?
I do have a list of names. When I hear a name that I like, I will put it in my phone. But I also have a baby book beside my computer. Mm-hmm. And a baby book features in Second First Impressions, funnily enough. So it's the same book that I have beside me.
I love that. Is there anything that you edited out of Second First Impressions?
No, not really. Just, I write pretty long. So my editor just asked me to tighten up some scenes. Cause if I had my way, they would just sit there forever. Looking at each other, staring at each other, she's looking at his hair mesmerized. My editor was like, a few points, she was like, I think we get it. She does really like his hair. I was like, no, like, I'm keeping it all in.
We get it. He has long, luscious hair.
I could have had more. He has. My personal goal to make everyone fall in love with Teddy's hair, who is its own character in the book.
I mean, it worked. It worked. Okay, the last one. What was the hardest scene to write in this book?
Hardest. I guess the ending where it all, I don't like writing the part in the book where it all falls apart after they've just gotten so happy. I always don't like doing that bit. So I guess I would say that.
Yeah, that's tricky. Okay, Miss Sally Thorne, this was delightful. This was such a pleasure for me. You are the romance novel queen in my eyes. I want to know what is next for you. We mentioned the Hating Game movie, which just mazel tov. It's going to be incredible. I'm so excited. What's next for you? More books on the horizon, the movie? What's going to go on?
Well, the movie is in post-production. So that means they're doing the final cut, putting all the music and soundtrack on, fixing the lighting and coloring. So once we have a final version, then it will be shown to distributors. Then we will know how you will see it, either streaming or in a cinema, and when you'll see it. So that's the only question anyone ever asks me, and I really don't know. and I'm doing one more book under my current contract. So I've finished the draft on that. I hope that I can continue to write more and more books. I've got 3 books on my little bookshelf here, but I hope one day I have 10 books or even more. Who knows?
You will, and we are looking forward to all of them. With the suggestion of more sex scenes from Mads, we can, just note that in. Thank you so much for doing this. Can you tell everyone where they can find you on social or a website?
Oh, sure. I guess Instagram is probably where I am the most. I think it's Sally Thorne Author. I don't really use Twitter anymore. I decided to put all of my funny thoughts into my books instead of free on the internet.
I love it. Yes.
And my website is SallyThorneAuthor.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you can just imagine me in Australia sitting under a eucalyptus tree. Yeah. That works too.
In folklore nature, in just, cottage core.
Australian style.
Yeah.
With a koala on my knee.
I love it. Well, thank you, sisters, for reading the book, for listening. And you can find us at OK Sis Podcast. Love you.
Thank you guys so much for reading it. Thanks, guys.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of 3. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.